You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, January 23rd, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, if not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, from Salon.com, Steve Kornacki on just the... It really is stunning, folks. What's going on in the Republican primary is pretty crazy. And Steve Kornacki will help us make sense of it. Also on the program today, kudos to the Obama administration, part of the Affordable Care Act, a new contraception rule, a follow-up on the SOPA battle, perhaps a prelude, and some right-wing nut job who runs a Jewish community paper in Georgia, flexing his right-wing nut job bona fides. That and more. Patriots will be in the Super Bowl. The question is not whether or not they'll beat the New York Giants. We know they will. The question is what kind of actions will we see? Super Bowl is taking place in Indiana. And the Indiana government is attempting to destroy unions. On Friday, I neglected, and in the better half of the program, we'll talk about that Dick Gregory interview. Got a lot of feedback on that. Dick Gregory, one of my heroes, also quite a character, shoots from the cuff. Is that a word? Is that a saying? Shoots from the cuff? Shoots from the hip? Speaks from the cuff? We'll talk about that in the better half of the program today. Before we do, I neglected on Friday to play the Screaming Majority's song of the week of the news and review. And I got contacted by one of the leaders of the Screaming Majority, David Benjoya, who said, I don't know if it's still relevant. Now, the fact that over the course of a weekend, there's been this much upheaval in the Republican primary race makes the song even that much more relevant. Rasmussen came out with a poll today. Now, it's Rasmussen, and they are not the most reliable of polling outfits. Nevertheless, Gingrich is now leading Mitt Romney in Florida. You know, they always say South Carolina is where the GOP establishment puts up that firewall and stops any challenge to the establishment pick. Well, now they're saying Florida is the real firewall. Newt Gingrich now over Mitt by 9 points in Florida. This is according to Rasmussen. This is a net 31-point swing in less than 2 weeks. It's fascinating. Let's listen to this song by the Screaming Majority, which was, oh, so spot on just 3 short days ago.
Free Enterprise was under attack. by Newt Gingrich's super PAC. Then he retracted, but by then the cat was out. Also joining in was the governor of Texas, talking about vulture capitalist excesses, cause protecting the downtrodden's what they're all about. No, said the elephant, besides you guys are irrelevant. You had your chance and you didn't do shit, so we're sticking with Ben and his lies, because it's free enterprise. The point is moot and the point is mint. The opposition is split and in fits, and the general, they'll all come crawling back to the tent. In a quiet room, in a penthouse suite, we can ignore the envious rattle in the street. We'll talk about how much we've got and how much more we'll get when they make Mitt president. Yes, said the elephant, besides you guys are irrelevant. You had your chance and you didn't do shit, so we're sticking with Mitt and his lies, because it's free enterprise.
Sticking with Mitt and his lies because it's free enterprise. I don't know. The GOP establishment has lost control of the Frankenstein that is its base. When we come back, we'll be talking to Steve Kornacki of Salon.com about that very topic. We'll be right back after this.
Everybody's coming home for lunch these days. Last night there were skinheads on my lawn. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Some people say that bowling alley's got big lanes. Say that bowling alleys all look the same.
Look the same, look the same.
There's not a line that goes here that rhymes with anything.
Anything, anything.
Had a dream last night, but I...
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Steve Kornacki. He is the politics columnist, a politics columnist. Reporter for Salon.com. What's that?
We got a few politics columnists, so I'm one of them.
Yeah, but I would say the top, with all due respect to your colleagues.
Well, I appreciate that, but I have a feeling you'd say the same if Joan Walsh was on the phone.
Nope. I'd say she's number two.
Wow. I'm going to tell her you said that.
Please. I don't want it to come as a shock to her. But yes, Steve Kornacki, you know, we run into each other all the time at, whether we're in the green room at Current or at, it used to be back in the day at CNN. And, the last time I saw you, I think we were both about to go into the Young Turks, and we were talking about how it may not be Mitt, but at the time, I think we were talking about, I don't know, Herman Cain or Rick Perry or who, or maybe it was Newt the first time. I can't remember, but this is really crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, I do remember it was Newt. It was early December, and what we were both looking at were these new polls that had just come out. You know, he was having his national surge, and you know, there was a poll in South Carolina that put him up 20 there, and there was a poll in Florida that put him up 27 points. And this was, you know, the first or second week of December. And, you know, what happened for the next few weeks, everybody remembers, you know, the Mitt super PAC went after Gingrich in Iowa, and a lot of sort of panicked Republicans spoke out against Gingrich. And, you know, they thought they'd kind of beaten him down and his poll numbers fell everywhere. But now here we are looking at what just happened in South Carolina, and we're moving on to Florida next. And all I can think about is that that poll that we were so stunned by a month ago, you know, and I think if he could get to, if he could have a 27-point lead back then, and now you look at this coming out of a huge win in South Carolina and going to Florida, boy, I don't really see a reason why most or all of those voters won't come back to him or haven't already come back to him. I'm really curious to see a poll there now.
Rasmussen just came out with a poll today. Now it's Rasmussen, but Mitt is up by 9 in Florida.
They have not. Okay, now see, because I saw one from this thing called Insider Advantage, which is, you know, like Rasmussen, you can't always rely on it. But they had Gingrich up 8 this morning.
That's right. Gingrich up by 9 on this Rasmussen poll. So,
oh, Rasmussen has Gingrich up 9. Oh,
yes.
Okay. I got you.
And so, all right. So, I mean, this is really, it's really amazing. I mean, I was reading some of the, apparently, you know, Romney is in, Florida, and I was reading Dave Weigel's Twitter feed, and he's quoting Romney, and Romney literally sounds like a guy who is, who doesn't have a narrative anymore. I mean, he's like, he's floundering around. He's been running for president for 6 years, and it's as if they're recalibrating his message every day because he can't figure out what to do here. He announced today, I guess, that he's going to be releasing his taxes, but just for the year 2010 and 2011 when they're able to scrub it. What's the most interesting thing that's happening, as far as I can tell, is what this is doing to Mitt Romney as a general election candidate, if he even makes it that far. Give me a sense of what's happening to him.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think what's happening is stuff that, that we all kind of thought would be out there hurting him, maybe hurting him, but would certainly be you know, in play in the general election, is coming to sort of hurt him now in the Republican primary as well, and create a possibility, at least as bizarre as it is, that he might not get through the Republican primary. I mean, you talk about, like, it started with the attacks on Bain Capital and his, you know, his record in the past in private equity. I think it was no secret for a long time that you know, if he was a nominee, the Obama campaign was gonna bring a lot of that stuff up. But what we didn't expect was that Mitt Romney, was that Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry would be bringing it up, and it created that. And I think this whole situation with his taxes and his evasiveness in dealing with his taxes last week. I mean, he actually got booed at that debate last Thursday night when he was trying to duck his way out of giving a straight answer. You know, I think it contributed to me one of the most fascinating numbers in the exit polls in South Carolina, and also when you look back at New Hampshire and Iowa, is there's, you know, we talk about Tea Party support and evangelical Christian support and how he's got challenges there. Well, he's got challenges with anybody really in the Republican primary, any voter who makes less than about $100,000. There's a huge income gap when you start looking at his, you know, he won big in South Carolina among voters with incomes over $200,000. He got blown out, you know, when you're talking about people making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And it's the same thing. We saw the same thing in Iowa. He actually got nearly 40% of the vote out in Iowa among people making over $100,000. But statewide, he got 24%. So he's found a reliable constituency here. It's the top 1% of the Republican Party, I think.
And what's interesting to me is that I remember, and I can't remember if it was in September or August of last year, Romney had an ad that came out when he was criticizing President Obama for a turn of phrase that Obama used in terms of the unemployed, maybe a bump in the road or something like that. And he had a fairly, what I thought was effective ad. And early on in the debates, Romney was really talking a lot about the middle class and about jobs. Like, he seemed to be surrounded by these freaks on the GOP stage. And he sounded not quite populist, but close to populist. And now it seems to me what has happened is that Gingrich has forced him to get up in the debate and start talking about, like, I'm not going to apologize for success. These sort of, like, arrogant lines that are really going to hurt him and obviously have been hurting him. But he's almost like double downing on this. This is sort of atypical for a primary, isn't it? Like, he's not, it's almost as if the further he goes in this primary, the less effective he is at rebutting the criticism of the addressing his liabilities.
Yeah, no, I'm exactly right. I mean, I think that the idea of for the Democrats, if they get to run against him in the fall, is, you know, to sort of paint him as whoever the Republican nominee is. The Democrats are going to say the Republican Party and the economic priorities of the Republican Party, you know, give preferential treatment and pamper the top 1%. And everything that we've been, that's sort of been in the air with Occupy Wall Street and everything else about income inequality in this country and how the there's this sort of super rich, super elite that's been insulated from the recession, has actually gotten richer than ever. Yeah, they want to say the Republicans are protecting that, you know, that class. That's going to happen no matter who the nominee is. But with Romney, there's the potential to paint him, to paint him as a symbol of that top 1% in a way that you can't necessarily with Gingrich, because everything about Romney's bearing, everything about his background, everything about his business career just exudes sort of, you know, top 1%-ness. And that's really, I think, what's sort of been accentuated in the last few weeks in the Republican race. I mean, the irony to me is, you know, the Romney people, I think, were aware of this to a certain extent, or if you look at how they've crafted their platform on economic issues, you know, I wouldn't say it's a moderate or a populist platform or anything like that, but they've taken pains to be less sort of overtly hostile to the middle class and what they're proposing than a lot of the other Republican candidates. The example that sort of comes to mind is he got in a dust up in a December debate, Romney did, with Gingrich over the capital gains tax. And Romney was saying, well, we should be cutting that only for the middle class. Now, that's basically a hollow gesture, because almost all the capital gains tax is paid by the top 1%, top 2%. Right. But Gingrich was calling for the complete elimination of the capital gains tax. So if you actually look at the policies, Gingrich's policies are better for the top 1% than Romney's are, but Romney just looks and sounds and feels like the top 1%, and I think that's a lot more threatening in the general election than Gingrich's simple, you know, tax plan.
And the irony also is that Gingrich made Romney move to the right on, I think, the Ryan plan, forced Romney to adopt the Ryan plan. He made Romney move to the right. Maybe it wasn't just him. Maybe it was also others, but on immigration. So Newt is actually able to attack Romney on immigration as well. It seems that, you know, if he does make it through this this primary, which I think is very legitimate to doubt at this point, he's going to come out a significantly weaker candidate than he was 4 months ago.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. I mean, here we are, we're talking about how Newt Gingrich is the voice of reason on immigration. I mean, I think the problem the Romney people have faced here, which we all know, is that there's so much, you know, suspicion from the right wing of the Republican Party, the Tea Party base, the evangelicals, all those, about, you know, is Romney really one of us? And there's just such a long paper trail in Massachusetts that gives them so much reason to doubt. So what they've looked for are, you know, any issue where there's a sort of a minimal paper trail, or where, you know, one of their opponents moves, you know, closer to the middle, they have looked for those issues and they want to jump on them. They've wanted to jump on them as fast and as hard as they could to really try to use those issues to prove, you know, loyalty to the right. And the Paul Ryan budget plan, because of the comments that Newt Gingrich made on Meet the Press, you know, last spring, we called it, you know, right-wing social engineering and all of that, they sensed an opening there, so they went hard behind, you know, the Paul Ryan plan. And immigration, they, you know, they sensed that Newt gave them an opening there by when he called for this, you know, World War II style civilian review board or whatever exactly that was. But again, they saw an opening, and so they just went as hard and as far to the right as they could. And, you know, I don't know that they've gotten any traction from it in the primary. They hope they will, but yes, I mean, once you get past the primaries, you've got weeks and months of video now of Romney saying these things that aren't going to necessarily sound good in October and November.
Have you seen any exit polling of South Carolina as to how much of a problem Mitt's Mormonism was?
You know, I'm looking, and it's tough to get. I mean, the thing that jumps out is if you look at the vote among evangelical Christians, who comprised, I think, 64, 65% of the electorate in South Carolina, It was a bloodbath. I don't have the numbers in front of me. So I think I saw like 46-20 for Gingrich among, you know, those voters. Obviously much more lopsided than the statewide total. So you're thinking if to the extent Mormonism is an issue, it's going to be an issue with the Christian right. It's going to be an issue with the evangelicals. There could be lots of reasons why they were more hostile to Romney than, you know, disproportionately hostile to Romney than just Mormonism. But I would look at that number and say it's certainly possible. That's a factor in there. I mean, it could just be that they don't trust him on abortion, but, you know.
But, Steve, I mean, how is it responsible for these pollsters not to ask that question? I mean, isn't this like a big, like, con job? I mean, the idea, everybody knows that this is a factor. Nobody knows exactly how much it is. But how is it these pollsters are not asking that question explicitly?
Yeah, I think I have seen it asked. And again, I don't have it in front of me. But, I mean, the reason I've always been kind of skeptical, even when they ask the question, is how many are going to admit it? First of all, how many are going to admit it? But secondly, how many are even really aware of it? Because one of the things I've read a couple, you know, political science books where you know, sort of get into this, where you can ask voters, you know, was it this issue to put you over the top? Was it that issue? You know, trying to understand voters' motivation. And a lot of times what you end up finding is, voters don't always understand their own motivations. And they make judgments about character, about personality, you know, about which one they like more. And then they sort of work backwards and figure out the issues from there and tell you, oh, it was the economy that did it, but it really wasn't the economy. So I wonder if it's something that's almost impossible to measure. But the thing that jumps out at me as we look at South Carolina, look across the South. There hasn't been too much polling of other southern states because they're not voting early in the process. But I've seen numbers from Mississippi that are probably now a month old, or I think like Alabama, Tennessee, states like this that are going to vote later in this process. But if the race is still close at that point, they'll be very relevant. And even before all of this, I mean, a month, 6 weeks ago, Romney was really struggling in those states, and Gingrich was doing really well. And this was even before Gingrich's surge nationally. I mean, I remember seeing a poll in Mississippi that put him like 10 points ahead of Romney, and this is before Gingrich took off. Right. And so I just look at those states, and I say, you know, I mean, it could be a lot of things leading to resistance to Romney, but it could. I mean, I could definitely see the cultural religious aspect.
What's your sense of the people who are running in congressional races? What's your sense of who they would rather see from a Democratic perspective, let's say, or you know, for a Republican? I mean, it doesn't matter how you measure this. Who would they rather? In other words, one theory I've heard about Mitt Romney is that if Mitt Romney's the nominee, a lot of these fundamentalists are going to stay at home. They're just not going to go and vote, and that it would be helpful for Democrats, at least in the House races, because even if a so-called moderate Republican or a moderate centrist Democrat would vote for Romney, they'd still probably then vote their incumbent out in the House, and it would give the Democrats a better chance of taking the House. The flip side I've heard is that if it's Gingrich, it's going to drive the Democrats' base out even more, and it will help congressional districts. What's your sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the flip side on that very strongly. I mean, I think with Gingrich, we can almost look to history and know almost exactly what's going to happen, because Gingrich was pretty much the face of the Republican Party from 1994 to 1996. You know, when he emerged as Speaker after the 94 midterms, and he became the dominant face of the party. I know Dole was the nominee in 96, but American politics in those 2 years was all about Gingrich versus Bill Clinton, and Gingrich very quickly racked up some of the worst, you know, most poisonous poll numbers ever seen by a national political figure. And every time he opened his mouth, he seemed to make it worse. Every time he came up with, you know, a bit of strategy in the House that was designed to sort of highlight some distinction with Clinton that he thought would benefit the Republicans, it backfired. And it ended up leading to, you know, elections in 1996, I think, where 18 House Republican incumbents were defeated. Democrats did not take back the House that year, mainly because this sort of regional alignment was still taking place, where a number of Democratic incumbents left districts in the South that over the last, you know, few decades had become very conservative. So Republicans were able to fill in those districts and minimize their overall losses. But make no mistake, Gingrich was just an enormous, gigantic liability for Republican candidates for the House all across the country in 1996. There were an estimated 75,000 ads run by candidates across the country, Democratic candidates, that attached their opponents to Newt Gingrich, to the radical Newt Gingrich agenda. I think you can pretty much give him credit for finishing off the Republican Party in the Northeast. I think of a state like Massachusetts that went into the 1996 congressional races with two Republican incumbents in their delegation. Both of them were defeated in 1996 because of Newt Gingrich. And since 1996, Massachusetts has not elected a single Republican to the House of Representatives. And we saw the same thing just, you know, throughout the Northeast. So I think if Gingrich is the nominee, I think that dynamic returns. That's just his nature. He's just that polarizing, that needlessly inflammatory. And I think he just turns off so many swing voters in so many parts of the country. And I think if you look at Romney, you know, I get the idea of evangelicals and the base not being motivated by him. But I think if there's one thing that's been clear the past 3 years, it's that I don't think there's a stronger current in American politics right now than the sort of resentment that the Republican base feels towards Barack Obama. So, sure, they may not be thrilled that Mitt Romney is their nominee, but if they have a chance to vote out Obama, I don't think they're sitting on their hands.
Gingrich has been really, I don't know if race baiting is really is totally accurate, but it's pretty accurate. I mean, is this I just can't really quite figure out what he is doing at this point, other than just sort of like willy nilly just going for it, because he's just thinking, like, you know, at the end of the day, if I was getting $65,000 per speaking engagement prior to this, I'm going to be up 80, 85, 90,000. I'm going to get $100,000 of speaking engagement after this. And so he doesn't really seem to care.
No. And there was, you know, there was that moment back in the spring and summer when he was off in Greece and his entire staff quit. And, you know, he looked like a total and complete joke of a candidate. And it looked like, you know, sort of the emperor had been exposed. And I thought at that moment, I thought sort of the silver lining of this campaign would be, you know, Gingrich was just going to flame out so spectacularly that he was going to have to disappear. That would be the upshot of this campaign. And now we're looking at, okay, this guy just won a landslide in a major primary. I mean, he's playing with house money at this point, no matter what happens. And he's going to get out of this. You know, he'll be, worst case, he'll be, you know, one of the premier pundits on the right for the rest of his life, reminding everybody of what a brilliant strategist he was to win the South Carolina primary after everybody doubted him. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we're ever going to get rid of Newt Gingrich.
Now, one of the theories that, I've had is that it's just sort of like almost mathematically, it was almost impossible for Gingrich to win because he's not on the ballot in some very key states, and he doesn't have this ground game. But if he manages to win Florida, which is a winner take all in terms of delegates, he literally, it seems to me that he has actually a mathematical chance to win. And at this point, that seems to be the only bar that would prevent, you know, something completely unpredictable from happening. In other words, if Jeb Bush was to jump in after Florida, let's say, highly unlikely, but he still would only have the opportunity to be in play for about 60% of the delegates because he's so late to the game. But it seems to me that if Gingrich wins Florida, that it's possible this may go to some type of like a brokered convention or something, right? I mean, statistically, I mean, mathematically speaking, nobody's really out of it yet. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I'm one of those who, you know, more or less every 4 years, whichever party's holding primaries, we seem to reach a moment where people say, oh, could this be the year we get the brokered convention? So, you know, I've been resistant to that talk and I've been skeptical of it, but I'll say, you know, if he wins Florida, I really think we're in uncharted territory, because we've seen in the past, we've seen candidates like Gingrich whose party leadership would look at them and say, we can't nominate this guy. And, you know, like Pat Buchanan winning the New Hampshire primary in 1996. And what we've seen in the recent past is the party leadership has pretty successfully tamped those things down, and they've never won two big contests in a row. But if Gingrich can win Florida and win two big contests in a row, I think then there's a real possibility. I think that cements him as sort of a long-haul candidate in this thing. And you talk about those numbers I was mentioning earlier in the South, so you think ahead then a few weeks to when you have, you know, it'll basically be Super Tuesday with a bunch of Southern states voting. So if Gingrich then sweeps across the South in those states, and let's say then Romney, or, you know, your theory, if Jeb Bush or somebody got in, whoever would sort of represent that Republican establishment, I think would still probably beat Gingrich in big states like, you know, Illinois, California, New York, places like that where there's still a lot of delegates at stake. So if you had sort of a moderate establishment candidate winning those big states, if you had Gingrich just sweeping up the South, and then if you throw in Ron Paul, who's targeting the small, mid-sized caucus states in February, where he's going to be better organized than anybody else, if he can gobble up, you know, 300, 400, 500 delegates there, yeah, I mean, then you could definitely reach a situation where nobody has that majority going to Tampa, and yeah, good luck resolving that.
And the amazing thing is, I think that that all throughout this, at the end of the day, the real relevance in my mind is that come the general election, there's going to be just an incredible dissension in the Republican Party. I mean, that, like, there's just no sense that this primary campaign is setting up someone to beat Barack Obama, who I think is, again, sort of like, you know, put this down in the column as to why, in some respects, he is one of the luckiest politicians in the history of this country. Because he's going, you know, at a time where people thought he was incredibly vulnerable 6 months ago, it now looks like they can't even get a legitimate challenger to him in the general election.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're the Obama White House, I know they'll never admit this publicly, but, you know, I'm sure they are going to be, you know, cheering very hard on January 31st for Newt Gingrich to win Florida, because, you know, that might be, and who knows, like, this has been such a volatile process, you know, you make predictions at your own peril, but, you know, I think that really might be the key to this. If Gingrich gets stopped in Florida, and I could see a situation where, you know, he's reemerged now, sort of like he did in early December when he was moving up in the polls, and we might now see, we probably will now see what we saw then, which is a lot of these sort of panicked opinion shapers within the Republican Party, people like George Will, Charles Krauthammer, Peggy Noonan, you know, people like that, who do not want Gingrich to be their nominee, who do not like him, who believe he'd be a disaster, will use their platforms, I think, between now and Florida to really go after him hard and to try to sway sort of rank and file Republican voters that, hey, look somewhere else. And that seemed to work in December when they went after him and did that. If they do that now, if it succeeds, if he ends up, you know, losing Florida, and if he ends up losing Florida by a fairly convincing margin, you know, I think all is sort of order is restored in the Republican Party, and Romney's probably on course. But yeah, if they do that, and Gingrich wins anyway, or I think even if he makes it real close, you know, it sets up the possibility, at the very least, you know, that this thing isn't going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess the X factor is now that Sheldon Adelson got such good returns on his first $5 million, what's to prevent a guy like that saying, like, you know what? I mean, $5 million bucks here, $5 million bucks there. I'm going to drop 15 just to see if I can just do this.
You know? And you know, how many other sort of rich Republican guys looked at Adelson and did that when Gingrich seemed to have no chance, and look what he got out of it. Now do they look at Gingrich and say, you know what, time to get on board. So now maybe you'll get a free Sheldon.
Unbelievable. Steve Kornacki, thanks so much for joining us.
Sure.
All right, folks, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back after this brief message.
I turn my feelings on the side. Yeah, yeah. Like I'm gonna ignite. I saw them stars go off tonight.
And of course, by brief message, I meant laying the Eagles of death metal send their musical message to you. So, and this is an interesting story. You know how Newt Gingrich has been using race baiting as a way of generating support in the Republican primary? I mean, there's really basically two things to Newt Gingrich's, three things to Newt Gingrich's success so far. One is Mitt Romney is a Mormon. And that always helps when you're running in the Republican Party, because the evangelical base of the Republican Party thinks that Mormons are Satanists. And like I always say, when faced with a choice between a Kenyan socialist that you know and a Satanist you don't, you might want to go with the Kenyan socialist. So Newt Gingrich takes that off the table. And of course, Newt Gingrich also has done so well because in the Republican Party now, in the base of the Republican Party, which is essentially now, I think, pretty much at least half, if not more, of the Republican primary voters, they don't care about policy. They don't know anything about policy. They can support people who they just know about resent. And if you didn't listen to our Corey Robin interview, go back and read it and listen to it again, because this is all just about reacting to emancipation by different parties. And without any real movement on the left, short of the Occupy movement, the Republicans are left are just sort of like reliving and relitigating the idea that black people have rights in this country. And so Newt Gingrich, this is just fantastic. A story, I guess this is in the, I don't know, I think the written by Mary Curtis, who's a contributor to The Root, Fox News, Charlotte, NPR, a couple of things. She wrote this piece, I think it was in the Post, about what happened with the Republican debate last week. Where this was on Monday's South Carolina debate, not to be confused with the Friday one or Thursday one, where Newt Gingrich got all sorts of points for chastising John King for bringing up the fact that his wife was, his second wife was saying that he wanted an open marriage. Because, of course, Newt Gingrich would never, never make marital infidelity an issue in politics. I mean, electoral politics. He would make it an issue when it comes to impeaching a president, but that's not the issue now. But Gingrich scolded Juan Williams. You remember Juan Williams was the hero of the right because he was fired from NPR. Well, now Juan Williams probably needs a 24-hour bodyguards because he brought up the fact that, or questioned Gingrich about the racial impact of his criticism of poor Americans' work ethic and his food stamp attacks on President Obama, Williams was attacked by the audience. And the best was this quote that this reporter caught it. When Gingrich stopped off in a campaign stop in South Carolina, a woman greeted Gingrich and she thanked him for, quote, putting Mr. Juan Williams in his place the other night. Now, I don't know how much racial sentiment went into this woman's comment. The idea of putting that black man who asked those sort of, I guess,
a black man with a Hispanic name, by
right.
the way. So
sort
it makes
of
it even more
like a question that was inappropriate. You put him in his place. But the idea that the Republican base is going to elect Newt Gingrich or is voting for Newt Gingrich because he slams down the debate moderator Think about how crazy that is. That his number one plank is that I don't take guff from reporters. Good luck, America. Because you don't need to know what I'm going to do in terms of policy. You don't need to know what I'm going to do in terms of like putting all those reflectors on the moon to save our, you know, to keep us off of foreign oil. You don't need to know any of that stuff. You just need to know that if a reporter comes at me, I'm going to look at him straight in the eye. And I'm just going to say, you don't know what you're talking about. Sit down. The Republican Party, the Republican voter, I should say, is so ridiculous, so moronic, that the one time I've ever thought in my life that we should do those seasetting institutes or whatever it is, where you set up the barge, you know, where millionaires create a new society. I think what we should do is when they set up these barges, we should be shipping all these people out there. That's all I think.
I enjoyed during that Thursday debate when they were talking about SOPA, and they all came out against it. Oddly enough, the crowd cheered wildly against it at first. So, and then they had to give their answer. So it's not like they could have fed off whatever the crowd's reaction was. But Rick Santorum was the only one who said, "Yeah, but we can't really have a free open internet. You can't just do whatever you want on the internet." And it's funny because Rick Santorum said it. Like, I wonder why Rick Santorum's right. against an open internet.
You don't
internet.
Want people creating like
let me Google his name. And
but it turns out that the staple of Gingrich's platform, you know, this that he keeps doubling and tripling and quadrupling down on, this idea that Barack Obama is a food stamp president and that he would go in front of the National Association of for Advancement of Colored People and say, you people should be advocating for paychecks, not food stamps. It's hard to understand why Newt got to that group as opposed to any other group, but I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Turns out, even his favorite line, that Barack Obama, that, well, the quote is, more people have been put on food stamps by Barack Obama than any president in American history. So says the professional historian who gets $1.6 million just to go over to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and explain to them history. Turns out that he was wrong. It turns out, surprisingly enough, that more were added under George Bush than under President Obama, according to the most recent figures, which, of course, liberal press, probably, liberal media.
A lot of things happened under George Bush that they like to blame Obama for.
The number of recipients rose by nearly 14.7 million people under George Bush. Under Obama, the increase so far has been 14.2 million. And the trend is actually going down. The number of people getting food stamps declined in last October by almost 45,000 people. Now, of course, President Obama had to deal with the impacts of the recession that hit in 2008 after the financial crisis. But the bottom line is, Newt Gingrich, you're wrong.
Surprise, surprise.
All right, folks. Let's head into the better half of the program. There, we will talk about the new contraception rule that has got all those fundamentalists in a snit. Insurance can cover Viagra, but not contraception. That's the problem. Also, a SOPA follow-up sort of endorses, I guess, what I had been saying about why Democrats were so slow to turn on SOPA. And that story of that guy from the Atlanta Jewish Community newspaper who essentially suggested the assassination of President Obama. Hmm. And we've also got a story about, which I think really explains why we have seen so few, so little action against the fraudulent banksters and the fraudulent mortgagesters. And here's a hint. Eric Holder. And call us in the after show at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. You can IM me at Majority FM. Folks, we've seen month to month even, I think, five-figure increase on the listeners of this program. Five? Six? I don't know. Lots of zeros there. On the listeners of this program, many of you have been listening to this program on a daily basis. We take no institutional or corporate funding for this program. 98% of our revenue comes from members. We need members to continue this program, to continue to improve it, and to continue it. So please, if you listen to this show every day, if you listen to this show three times a week, please become a member. If we get just a tiny percent of you to become members, we'll be in great shape.
That other 2% of revenue comes from when he has to cut my pay because members quit over me.
That's right. I'm actually like instituting a program where Matt actually pays to work here. But I just don't know if he's got the deep pockets that we need to support this program. All right, see you in the better half.